For Ellie Botts, who was impossible to forget, and Sherry Steinkellner, who was impossible to ignore.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents The Great American Whatever by Tim Federle. Read by the author. This program includes an audio interview with Tim Federle. Please stick around after the credits to go behind the scenes with the author.
Chapter 1. I don't consider myself to be precious, necessarily, but give me air conditioning or give me death. Maybe the only thing worse than a Midwestern winter is a Midwestern summer, especially when your AC is broken. We are going on our second straight week of record-breaking highs here. This is the universe's way of showing it has a sense of humor, since I am personally going on my sixth straight month of record-breaking lows. I have got to get a new air conditioner. I actually say this out loud, just to hear a voice. Anyone's voice, really, these days. I have seriously got, I say again, crawling to the side of the bed and tricking my body into standing upright, to get a new air conditioner. And then, a little louder, I am requesting a new air conditioner from the universe. Like if I say it enough times, the air conditioning fairy will arrive. Hey, you never know. I give it 20 seconds. Alas, no fairy, other than, you know, me. I dare my feet to walk me to the bathroom so I can take a whiz, and then I lope back out to my bedroom, and all of this cardio makes me hot enough to formally debate cooling off options that don't involve leaving my room. I'd remove my clothes, but I'm already wearing only my lucky boxers, and every time I take them off these days, I'm like, what's so wrong with me that I am almost a senior and I still haven't been naked with another person? Great. See? Now I'm even hotter. I keep my boxers on and move to the next option. The mini fridge that Mom got me 2 birthdays ago isn't quite big enough for me to comfortably lay my head inside. Believe me, I've tried. And if I took out my broken AC and cracked the window, I'd have to confront the reality that I might hear, like, birds, or worse, the merry squeals of neighborhood children. And who has the stomach for that kind of unannounced joy at this hour? So I go low-tech, slumping into my beanbag chair and fanning myself with a takeout menu. That's when some sweat rivulets drip from my elbow onto the floor, and not just that, that wouldn't be so bad. But my sweat hits a random page of an application for this lame student filmmakers competition. Apparently, I never got around to completing the application last fall, let alone sending it in. I can't seem to finish anything these days except, oh, dessert. I kick the form under my desk and decide to sneak downstairs and just stick my face in the freezer for a minute. Hey, maybe it'll shrink my pores at the same time. The school counselor calls that kind of thing multitasking, which she also claims is a dangerous myth. No, really, this is an actual hand-to-God quote. Multitasking is a dangerous myth, Mr. Roberts. She always calls me Mr. Roberts, probably as mildly embarrassed to say my first name as I am. Can't blame her there. Studies show that humans are able to pay attention to only one thing at a time, Mr. Roberts. Are you listening to me? And I'd prefer for you to pay more attention to your schoolwork than to your movies. But the counselor was dead wrong, because as she was yammering on that day about how there's no such thing as multitasking, I was nodding and making earnest faces and imagining how incredible it would be if the school was hit by a freak comet. I was, you know, multitasking. Obviously, this was all before I stopped attending classes altogether. Mom is downstairs on the wicker couch in our sunroom, snoozing as always. I tiptoe by and open the freezer, hoping some popsicles will have magically appeared. The popsicle fairy? Only to find a buttload of healthy choice meals. Open question. Is it still a healthy choice if you have three of them in one sitting? Because that's how many are scattered around Mom's feet right now. She's really let herself go. See, Mom sort of eats her feelings, and this year has been nonstop feelings. The difference between us is that I can basically demolish a large pizza in under 15 minutes and actually lose a few pounds, if I'm also worrying about my future while chewing. I walk past a landfill's worth of unopened mail on our kitchen counter with this hair salon postcard advertising half-off bold new summer looks sitting on top. Maybe I'll trim my own hair today, I mumble to myself, careful not to wake Mom. She's actually really cute when she's asleep. Anyway, I could use a bold new summer look or an anything new summer anything. I've had the same haircut since I was a toddler, a style you might call longish and brown. So maybe I'll finally do something different with it, to spice up the day. I don't know. My therapist has encouraged me toward optimism. I shut the freezer and trudge back upstairs to root around for a beard trimmer on Dad's shelf in the medicine cabinet. When he left, he just left, meaning all his stuff is still here. If you know anyone in the market for pleated knee-length shorts, let me know ASAP. Update. I am back in my bathroom with Dad's rusty old trimmer. It buzzes right on, and I consider it a minor financial triumph that at least the electricity hasn't been turned off around here. Maybe the local energy company has made it an unofficial policy not to screw with my mom for a few months. Our little community has basically written us an ongoing blank check of worried looks and faux concern, which is what happens when your big sister gets killed in a car wreck right outside the school on the day before Christmas break. Oh, spoiler alert. So, I'm lifting Dad's clippers to my sideburns, or attempting to, anyway, but I lose control of them, alarmed by a thud at my bedroom door. Jesus, I barely even heard Mom come up the stairs. Rare. Thud, thud, thud. Now the knocking is twice as loud, and not only because I have taken my earplugs out. I've been wearing earplugs for a while now. They give the world a comforting dullness. Mom, come on! You know this is me time. It's been me time for about half a year now. It's not your mother, says my not mother. It's your Jeff. Great. It was bound to happen. Old friends have a way of creeping up on you. I'm coming in. I'm naked, I lie. I don't care, Quinn. Oh, it's Quinn, by the way, my name. What I'd give to be a John or a Mike or even an Evan. To be an Evan is to have been guaranteed a completely tragedy-free life right from the get-go. What kind of dad names his first and only son Quinn? The kind who walks out without taking his pleated knee-length shorts or rusty clippers with him. That's the kind. Jeff kicks my door open. A little dramatic. My lock hasn't worked in, forever. Dude, he says, grabbing his nose and laughing through his hand. Evidently it smells like I haven't had a shower in a month-ish, which I haven't-ish. Your room makes me embarrassed to be a teenage boy, Jeff says, stepping inside. And that is saying something, because I literally name my farts for Pete's sake. Poor Pete. Who is Pete? Why do people do such terrible things just for his sake? Hey. Hey, Jeff says, what happened to your head? I look back at the bathroom floor. A severe clump of my hair is lying in a heap by the sink, like it was making a prison break from my scalp and got gunned down. If you haven't seen Escape from Alcatraz, by the way, put it on the list. Great movie. Anyway. You startled me, I say to Jeff, right in the middle of a thrilling autobiographical haircut. But I'm not really pissed. In fact, the part of my head that's now missing the clump is feeling a little cooler, maybe. My first accomplishment in weeks. Heck, months. It's a good thing you're not ugly, Jeff says, and then, it's actually kind of a not terrible look for you, he adds, squinting at me like it'll help shrink his exaggeration. I wasn't really asking for reviews, I say, but thanks. It's a bit of an insult to get judged by Jeff on my look, as it were. I don't have a particularly adventurous sense of fashion myself. Give me jeans and a t-shirt and let's call it a day. But Jeff's outfits never even fit right. His clothes appear to be actively leaping from his body at all times, as if they're afraid to be seen in public with him. Today, he's in a Steelers t-shirt, a pair of vaguely tragic camouflage cargo shorts, and neon yellow flip-flops. Not to mention, bless him, an attempt at a mustache. This is new, or new to me. It's been a while. We've got to get you out of the house, dude, he says. Like to a movie or an Eaton Park or something, anything. It's time. My pulse thumps. I have to pull it together and start locking our front door. Food delivery guys just let themselves in these days and head straight up to my room. And now this. I'm not ready for this. No way, I say. It's a weekend. I don't want to run into anyone from school out there. I start waving my hand at the general direction of the window like there's a zombie apocalypse happening on my block. A zombie apocalypse and not just, you know, Western Pennsylvania. It's Wednesday, Jeff says, laughing, and it's the summer, so everybody's probably at the pool. You can duck down when we drive by. It actually sounds amazing to dive into the pool right now. A freezing one. Head first, in the shallow end. Dude, Jeff says, noticing a stack of pizza boxes in the corner of the room that have, in my opinion, begun to take on an artistic still life quality. We're throwing those away today. But then he just looks at me and goes, so? Like I invited him over, which I did not. What's the game plan? Accidentally, I speak. Well, I kind of need to get a new air conditioner. Jeff wipes his arm across his forehead. Gee, you think? He crosses to grab a ruler from my desk, which is covered in a layer of dust that I want to describe as thin, but is in fact thick, bordering on duvet. What are you doing? I say. Like, redecorating? Man, it's been ages since I've had a scene partner. My dialogue's rusty. I'm measuring your window. I perk up. Ooh, are we jumping to our deaths? Jeff shoots me a straight boy's version of daggers, which are actually more like bullets. Please, like a straight boy would ever knife somebody to death? That would require a degree of closeness I don't think they're genetically capable of. Dead teenager jokes, Quinn? You, of all people? My timing's off. Sue me. He ignores me instead, the in-person equivalent of sending a call straight to voicemail. Not that I've been on my cell much these days. Like, at all. I'm just getting some dimensions, he says, and then we're going out to buy you that air conditioner. But I'm barely listening, because now I'm staring past Jeff to the rocky driveway outside, where he and Annabeth and I set up a lemonade stand when we were little. Ugh, I hate that word. Were. The only word I hate more than were is was. Annabeth is so not a past tense kind of person. Frankly, my sister could be so present it was intimidating. I blink hard and kind of hope a zombie apocalypse might really appear. A real-life Night of the Living Dead, excellent popcorn flick, except set in the daytime in our yard. Somebody bite me, please, I would yell out the window. But nope, no zombies. It's just that rocky driveway out there, with no lemonade stand in sight. All right, Jeff says, all set. The floor creaks, which must mean he's moving toward the door. I'm on pause, stuck looking outside. Then, hold up, I say. How much do you think air conditioners cost? I'm a little low on cash these days. Last night, I had half a Hot Pocket for dinner and a packet of Theraflu for dessert. It actually wasn't so bad. That stuff will knock you out. Jeff's tapping something into his phone. I don't know. We'll use my mom's card if we have to. His parents have a nicer house than we do. Actually, everybody does. Now Jeff's in my bathroom, which never ends well. But when I go to tell him no and to use the one downstairs, my shower squeaks on. Plot twist. Damn it, I hear him mutter. He scalded his hand, I know it. Our sole luxury around here is instant hot water, and also an agreement that you don't have to make eye contact at the dinner table, which is actually pretty great. Get in, Jeff shouts to me. I am not taking a shower with you, I say, as a joke, obviously. You wish, he goes, but not in a mean way. Also, we've never really talked about that, but I think he knows I do not wish. Frankly, there have been really good sandwiches I'd rather lose my virginity to than Jeff. He's not my type. I'm still narrowing down my type. We switch places, and when he's back in my room, I step into the moldy chamber that's also known as my shower. I'm giving you 2 minutes, he says from outside the door. Lay off, I call back. It's not like Pittsburgh is going through a drought. Jeff pushes the door back open and shakes his head at me. Quinn, your friggin' life has been a drought, and this summer we're gonna make some rain. So, yikes, am I right? I literally spend half my life wanting to rewrite Jeff's taglines. Very poetic, I say, covering myself up. I'd do a slow clap for you, but I don't want to expose my junk. He rolls his eyes and heads back into my room. I keep trying to think of good excuses to get him out of the house so I can just lie down in the bathtub and maybe try to fall back asleep. But it's been so long since I've engaged in an intellectual debate that stretched beyond pepperoni or plain that my brain stalls. This is your 1 minute warning, he yells. I let the water gush into my mouth, and I close my eyes and plug up my ears with my fingers, and in the insistent tip, tip, tip on the tin roof of my head, I decide that making some metaphorical rain this summer isn't the worst idea of all time. Look at me, attempting optimism. I make a note to share this with my therapist at the next session. That'll buy me some brownie points. It's funny how I try to piss off my school counselor but try to impress my therapist. Throw the word doctor in front of somebody's name and all of a sudden I want her to like me. 15 seconds! Who am I kidding? I want everyone to like me. Okay, hang out in the hallway, I say to Jeff. I towel off in my room and throw on a cleanish pair of shorts and a definitely not clean t-shirt, and then I slip on some Vans and duck my head out to check if he's still there or if I just made this whole thing up. If I'm back to my old ways, naively imagining things will turn out okay, like they do in the movies. You ready to jumpstart June? Jeff goes. He's there all right, sitting against the hallway wall, playing a game on his phone and not even pausing to look up. God, his outfits are ridiculous. God, it's good to see him. I guess we'll find out, I say. He leaps to his feet and pockets his cell. Just be quiet going down the stairs. My mom is sleeping. I watch his eyes flick over to the buzz mark in my hair, and right when I think he's going to say, put a hat on. Because my head really does look like a yard work accident. Instead, he just goes, see you in the car, and he smiles. You know, that's the thing about best friends. They don't really care what you look like. The real ones don't, anyway. He clomps down the stairs. He isn't quiet about it at all. Straight boys. I take one more survey of my room, wondering how it'll feel to return to such a storm of dirty laundry and empty Hot Pocket containers later on today. Let's go, Jeff whisper shouts from downstairs. I've got to get out of here. Nobody ever talks about the fact that grief's best friend is boredom. Why is that? Why aren't we warning people about this? Shotgun, I call back. Chapter 2. Not to sound like an old lady, but has the outside world always been so loud or felt so awkward? For instance, there is maybe nothing more awkward than sitting on a lawnmower in aisle 4 of a busy Home Depot without a cell phone to pass the time while your best friend is off finding an employee. Like, all-time awkwardness record. Oh my God, Quinn Roberts. Scratch that. There is something more awkward than all of that. It's being caught doing it. Oh, hey, I go, I knew this would happen. The zombie apocalypse has arrived, and it's starring Liz Morgan. How's it going? Liz was on the pep squad with Annabeth their freshman year. Annabeth wasn't the biggest fan of Liz, but my sister was so plainly decent to everybody that the entire school considered her to be, like, a second-tier friend. I was third-tier by association. How are you? Liz says, while kind of absent-mindedly peeling away a layer of country club sunburn from her arm. She is first-tier, by the way, and giving me the kind of look you'd give a turtle that's been stuck on its back for 6 months. You have to understand, usually humans forget even the most crippling events if they are not personally inconvenienced themselves. My sister's blazing car blocked the only open exit from school that December afternoon, and thus Liz Morgan and every other student became a kind of victim, trapped for an extra hour on the last day before winter break. I'm okay, I say, remembering to cover the buzz mark in my hair. Then, Liz, Jeff says, reappearing, thank God, and trailed by the kind of Home Depot employee who looks like he majored in hating teenagers at some junior college in Ohio. Hey, Liz says. She might not know Jeff's name. Regardless, I catch him checking her out, though, frankly, Stevie Wonder could probably catch Jeff checking Liz out. Is somebody buying an air conditioner or not? The Home Depot employee says, and Liz giggles and covers her mouth and goes, well, I'm not, and then she backs away and takes off like this is the most hilarious and embarrassing mix-up in the history of comedy. Girls, man. Jeff sighs in her wake. He's never had a girlfriend. I mean, look at his shorts. The Home Depot guy casually puts his hand on the single most expensive air conditioner out of about 1,000 options. So how big a room are you cooling off? He asks me, and I realize I should stand up and pretend to be a human. I look at Jeff, like maybe he'll just sort of intuitively know my bedroom's square footage. His mom is an architect. But then I tell myself to answer this question. Seriously, I go, answer the question, Quinn, to myself. Because maybe answering an easy question, like this one, will help build my confidence up to the harder ones I'm bound to be getting any day now. Like, do you think you'll graduate with the rest of the seniors next year? Or are you still planning on making your famous movies now that Annabeth is gone? Or, speaking of Annabeth, why didn't you show up to your own sister's memorial? The room's big enough to fit a twin-size bed and 11 pizza boxes, I say to the Home Depot guy, fast. And Jeff busts out laughing in a way that is so musical, it practically borders on inappropriate underscoring for the scene we're having. In other words, it's the best song ever. The employee narrows appropriate AC models down to 2, and I blindly point at the one that I think looks the cutest, God help me, and then Jeff goes, let's pay for this thing, and whaps my shoulder pretty hard. I act like it hurts, but it actually feels good. It feels like another person. We make our way to the parking lot. It is so unbelievably hot out that I can smell my speed stick wafting up like an alpine fog. Beats the alternative. Hey, you did good back there, Jeff says after we slide the air conditioner box into his trunk. And I do mean his trunk. When your dad owns the biggest car dealership in town, you get your own car, and it's not even pre-owned. What do you mean I did good? I say, you bought this damn thing. It was your first time being spotted in public, he goes, and you didn't even flinch. He's talking about Liz, of course, but he's wrong. I did flinch. I flinched when I saw Liz clicking her nails against her phone screen because she has the exact same Panda Bear phone case that Annabeth has. Had. It's weird how you remember the little details. I don't even remember what I had for lunch yesterday. Quinn, Jeff says. Actually, lie. I had a microwaved burrito and one spoonful of plain yogurt, having mistaken it, tragically, for vanilla. Hmm? I say. I said, do you want to get an icy or something? That sounds really good, actually. Nah, I say. I think I just want to go install this thing and take a nap. I had a really long night. Of sleeping, I don't say. A long night of sleeping. Like 13 hours. I'm telling you, Theraflu works. Okay, no problem, Jeff says, unlocking the car doors. But then his phone dings as we're climbing in, and he checks it, and he grins. Jeff has four distinct grins. This is his trouble grin. What? I say. He looks at me. He's still grinning. What? He turns on the car. Sorry, he says. Our plans just changed. Chapter 3. Forget what I said earlier. Best friends very much do care what you look like, especially when they are dragging you to your first ever college party tonight. Yeah, you guys, this is going to be tricky to fix. Meet Zoe Phillips. Jeff and I are in her parents' basement, three neighborhoods over behind the park. Zoe is circling me like she's a trainee witch who's been left alone with the cauldron for the first time. You just have to be kind of quick about it, Jeff says to her, because Quinn and I have to get downtown before traffic hits. Zoe is a former classmate of ours who got her GED and is going to cosmetology college this fall, not beauty school. Do not call it beauty school in front of her, believe me. Just don't do anything too crazy, I say to her. Zoe's own haircut seems to have been achieved by setting fire to it, sticking her head into a food processor, hard to tell. Zoe gathers most of my hair in her hands and then bites her lip. You've got a lot of nerve, she says, grabbing a strangely large pair of scissors, like the kitchen kind, demanding miracles after you left the house looking like this. That makes me feel kind of bad. If there's one thing I'm usually not that self-conscious about, it's my looks. I even did some modeling when I was little. I mean, just local stuff, but it was still modeling. Apparently, there's a whole new thing to question about my life now. If the way I feel inside is actually eroding my shell into something legitimately ugly. I watch Jeff collapse into this fugly love seat and act like he's having a seizure, just to make me laugh. It works. So, big plans tonight, guys? Zoe says. Her voice is unsteady. A single clip of hair falls to my shoulder. She takes a step back. Here goes everything. Just some party, Jeff goes. At my sister's new place in Squirrel Hill. Had to make sure Quinn didn't show up looking like a lost bet. He gives me the thumbs up in a way that's so earnest I have to look away. Too much kindness in one day and I might internally combust, or worse, cry. I don't cry in front of people. Cool, Zoe says in a drone. She gives up on the scissors, reaches for electric clippers, and looks at me in the mirror. You ready? She asks, with a tone that suggests that she, in fact, is not ready. He's ready, Jeff says, when I realize I haven't answered yet. Probably a full 30 seconds later. Perhaps I'm just hypnotized by how hard Zoe's hands are shaking. I could have just given myself a buzz cut, of course, but at least Jeff got to hang out around a real live girl for 20 minutes. He's never really been with a girl. Anyway, that's the most optimistic way I can frame my new haircut. And believe me, they all got cut, every one of them. Picture a cue ball with lips. Jeff's tapping his fingers against his steering wheel and humming, attempting to add harmonies to a song on the radio that's in an entirely different key. When he makes a surprise right out of Zoe's parents' subdivision, I use the moment as an excuse to crank down the volume. "Wait, why aren't we going left?" I ask. "Why are we taking the parkway?" Jeff keeps drumming right along, still hearing a song that I am not. "I thought we'd take the long way. To, like, avoid going past the school." "Oh, that's pretty thoughtful of him." "Oh." Jeff knows I still haven't been back, not since the day before Christmas break. And so I still haven't seen the guardrail that Annabeth crashed into, head first, dying instantly or close to instantly. Those were the last words I heard about her final moments, after the principal himself ducked into my health class and pulled me into the hall and told me he had some difficult news for me. I was sure it was going to be about my mom. I'm always stressing out about her health because of her weight. But no, it was Annabeth. "Your sister, Quinn, has been in an accident, Quinn." I'll never forget that, the way the principal said my name twice in the same sentence, before he explained how Annabeth had run the red light at the bottom of the hill outside school, how she had gotten sideswiped and spun on the ice into the guardrail, how, incidentally, she had died instantly or close to instantly. And right then, I smelled the smoke from her car. That's the same day I started wearing earplugs. That's the same night I gave up on becoming a screenwriter, or an anything writer, or an anything. "Well, maybe we can drive by it sometime later this summer," I say to Jeff. He is still tapping his hands. This generic brass and fake leather bracelet he always wears is adding annoying tambourine sounds. "Sure thing," he goes, "but just a heads up, there's this, like, weird portrait of Annabeth painted on the side of the school now." "Okay, I'm not following." "The principal had the middle schoolers do it as a spring art project tribute thing." "Okay," he's stalling. "And?" There's always an "and" with Jeff. He pulls onto the parkway. "Dude, your sister kind of ended up looking like a giant pug." Somehow this makes me laugh. If you think I'm a confusing person, imagine actually being me. "Why are you laughing?" "That's just ridiculous with a side of ridiculous," I go, opening his glove compartment to get a Jolly Rancher, which is melted beyond oblivion. Sounds like a straight-to-DVD Disney release. "My sister, the pug." Oof, no reaction. That can't be good. People used to say I was witty, the guy who could find the funny in any situation. "Anyway," I go. It's quiet for a little while, and when I reach to adjust the volume back up, I catch Jeff wiping his nose against his arm. I should be the one crying, but I'm not. It never dawns on me that as an American, you are legally allowed to cry in front of others. Maybe I've just seen too many old movies. Tough guys never cry in old movies. "Hey, actually, can you get off at the next exit?" I say. "I should swing home for a sec. I want to put on a clean shirt for the party." "Quinn, we both know you don't have any clean shirts." "Ha." I am thinking of so many mean things I could say about his mustache. I punch his arm instead, and his car swerves, which makes my stomach nervous. My stomach is like a weather vane. It knows what I am feeling before I do, always. Maybe that's why I've been the emotional equivalent of a hot pocket for half a year. "I might not have any clean shirts," I say, "but my dad does." "Okay," Jeff says, using his turn signal like the responsible young man he apparently turned into during my recent absence. "I'll be 2 seconds," I say, when he pulls into our rocky driveway with no lemonade stand in sight. But he doesn't stay in the car. He follows me right up the front steps and right into the foyer and right past the powder room with the broken toilet seat until we find Mom with her head in the freezer like she's an ostrich who couldn't find any suitable sand. "Babe?" Mom says, pulling her beautiful face out. Seriously, she's beautiful. Fact. "Where did you go?" She shuts the freezer door. "And what happened to your gorgeous hair?" That's a stretch. My former hair was about as gorgeous as bathwater after a bath, after a rugged hike. My current haircut is, at least, practically see-through. "It's the new trend, Ma," I say, running my hand over the stubble. "All the cool kids are doing it." "Well, at least I get to see that handsome face again." "Hi, Mrs. R," Jeff says, pushing past me and giving Mom the kind of hug people write songs about. "Jeffrey, Jeffrey, look at you. A regular man." Jeff feigns a whole aw shucks routine, but you can tell he's secretly thrilled to be getting attention from a female. Any female. Mom reaches her hand forward and tries wiping Jeff's upper lip. "You've got something there, Jeffrey," she says, and he pulls back and hops up to sit on our counter, where he attempts to say with a totally straight face, "It's a mustache, Mrs. R." But that just turns Mom into an instant giggle machine. It is so good to hear her feeling good about something. "Sure it is, Jeffrey," she says, winking at me. "Sure it's a mustache." I take off. Jeff and I are hanging tonight, backing out of the kitchen before she can put up a fight that I didn't ask for her permission first. So I'm going to throw on a clean shirt. Wait for it. Wait for it. But she doesn't put up a fight or say I can't go. She just looks at Jeff, and right away, both of their eyes are watery, like it's been their big secret plan all along to get me out of the house. Which, who knows, maybe it has been. "Call me if you're going to be later than 11, Mom yells when I'm hopping up the stairs 3 steps at a time. 6 months of inactivity have suddenly turned me into a well-rested Iron Man. "You bet," I yell back. Except my phone isn't charged. It isn't even plugged in. I don't even know where it is, to be honest, because I sort of blocked that day out. I haven't turned my phone on since the accident, when I figured out why Annabeth got into the accident to begin with, dying instantly or nearly instantly, as if the timing of somebody's death matters. They're dead. Roll the credits. I ransacked Dad's old closet to try and find his least offensive shirt. It's a delicate proposition. This is my first college party, and I agreed to go only because it's a group of people who don't know anything about my past and won't look at me like I'm the only surviving seabird after a devastating oil spill. Also, there's going to be beer. But the asshole formerly known as Dad's shirts always tended toward Hawaiian prints and polyester button-ups. These are not the shirts of a man who owns the area's number one car dealership or hugs his kids. These are the shirts of a shifty junior manager who walks out on his wife on her birthday. I'm stuck. I give up and go to Dad's shelf in the medicine cabinet, grabbing some okay-looking polo cologne and giving my t-shirt a solid 5 pumps, figuring 3 of them should mellow out by the time we show up to the party. "You kids done catching up?" I say from the bottom step, rounding my way into the kitchen like everything's normal again. But I don't think they heard me because they're whimpering? No. Because they are whimpering, period. Mom is holding Jeff and rocking him a little bit, each of them acting out the very scene I still haven't had with her myself yet. I study my shoes and pull off a pretty good pretend cough. "Let's go," I say, before traffic gets bad. Chapter 4. We're on the street outside Jeff's sister's place in Squirrel Hill, looking up at a couple of big-shot college kids who are leaning out of a window smoking. I had the bright idea to stop and pick up something nice for the party, so when someone finally buzzes us in and we trudge up the 4 floors without an elevator, I count it as a minor setback when a girl in a fedora swings open the door, looks at what I've brought, and calls back to the group, "Great, another hummus." "Dude, let's go in," Jeff says. The place is awesome. Like, I can't believe in a couple of years I could actually live like this. You know, if I start doing my homework again and actually apply to college, huh? "We don't have to stay long," Jeff says. Now we're standing just inside his sister's doorway at the beginning of a long hallway that hopefully leads to unlimited fun and beer. Tonight is the night I try beer and maybe pot. "It's cool," I go, noticing a tea-colored stain in the ceiling. "I'll be okay." "I actually can't stay that late, to be honest," Jeff goes, starting to lead me toward a room that's boomeranging with voices. "I have the first shift at Loco Mocha tomorrow." "Wait, you got a job?" I go. I stop him beside a bathroom that's got this giant Yankee candle going. Classy place. "Yeah, I got a job," Jeff goes. "Turn on your phone sometime. It will deliver mysterious things to you, like news." "No, I just can't believe you got a job." "We used to make movies together every day, all day, every summer. I'd write them, Annabeth would direct, Jeff would star. He was a terrible actor, so terrible it was funny, and somehow seemed like a version of good. My dad made me get a job." "But your dad is like..." I consider how to phrase this. Jeff and I don't talk about money. He just pays for stuff while I look away. Loaded. Jeff laughs, heads into the bathroom, and swishes with Listerine right out of his sister's bottle. Straight boys, every last one of them a mystery. Anyway, he's back. "We do fine, but we are not exactly loaded. That's just what people think." "You drive a brand new Toyota, Jeff." "You don't know anything about cars, Quinny. It's not exactly a Tesla." "What's that?" "Exactly." We keep walking. It is a seriously long hallway, made emptier by how there's nothing in it but us. No furniture or posters or anything. I can't believe college kids can afford a place with such a long hallway. "Well, whatever," Jeff goes. "My dad said that in order to learn money, you've got to earn money. So, like I said, whatever." These must be the lessons other kids get from their dads. Here is a lesson I got. When your wife turns 40, run for the hills and don't take your shorts. Maybe I should get a job at Loco this summer, I start to say. It could be fun to make coffee all day. But Jeff's big sister, Carly, appears at the end of the hallway, puts her hands on her hips, and openly examines our outfits. Carly herself looks as if she was standing outside an Urban Outfitters when a pipe bomb went off. "Jesus, bro," she says, clucking at Jeff. "Are you still getting dressed in the dark?" She's majoring in fashion merchandising, if that helps. "Ha ha, Carly," Jeff goes, punching her shoulder harder than guys our age should. Carly is always ripping on Jeff, but she loves the dude. Can't blame her. I mean, the mustache alone gives Jeff a make-a-wish vibe that you have to kind of fall for, in a strictly platonic way. "At least Quinny boy had the decency to dress in neutrals tonight," Carly goes, bypassing Jeff and giving me a huge hug. My arms don't know how to manage a hug anymore. "Wow," Carly says, coughing. "Neutrals and cologne, Quinn. Neutrals and cologne." I pull back and lift my collar to smell myself. "Too much?" "No," Carly says, running her hand over my head. "People will be too distracted by the hot new military man here to notice that he fell into a vat of polo." "Aw, whatevs." "Seriously, Quinn, you look handsome as whoa. You look like a man." Jeff disappears into the montage of bodies just beyond, and I feel my heart kick into gear. Call it little brother syndrome. I am desperate for my own independence and then can't stand it when I get it. I decide I could use that beer. I look like a man. Men drink beer. "Come on," Carly goes, taking my hand. Let's get you a Sprite.
Great.
She leads me into the living room, where some people are sitting on a picnic blanket in the corner and lighting up what I'm sure is a joint. I've never smoked one myself. Not that I wouldn't, necessarily. It's just when you are third tier at school, you don't exactly hit the party rounds. But I'm not third tier here. I'm no tier. I'm nobody. It's perfect. It's hot as balls in here, some guy shouts from the couch. Carly hands me a 7-Up, not Sprite, and yes, there's a difference. And some girl goes, I love this song! And pulls up the hot as balls guy, temperature, not looks, like definitely not my type, from the couch, and they start dancing around a little. The guy's got moves, but the girl is all elbows and knees, and I find myself staring at these mystical college people in a way that might be bordering on stalkerish if I'm not careful. You look like a stalker, Quinn, Jeff says, sneaking up and holding out a little plate of carrots. Jesus, I say. Are you off to feed a bunny or something? Jeff laughs, too hard, it wasn't that great a line, and thrusts the plate at me. No, dude, I just figured you probably hadn't had any fruits and vegetables since, like, the holidays. I've seen your freezer. I snort, but he isn't wrong. My mom's theory, which I fully endorse, is that fruits are best in a cobbler and vegetables are best in the ground. And yet, I've got that crazy skinny metabolism on my side. But calm down, because I don't mean the ripped kind of skinny. The only six-pack I've got is a case of Sprite I keep in the back of my mini-fridge for special occasions. It's still a full six-pack. It's been a while since I've had a special occasion. Play it again, Car! The dancing girl calls over to Carly, who's DJing from her iPhone. And Jeff leans in and goes, isn't it funny that college kids aren't that much more mature than we are? And here I'm thinking they look a full 10 years older and probably know to spritz only 2 pumps of cologne and not 5. But I nod and go, yeah, I was just thinking that too. Song of the summer, Jeff goes, and I squinch up my face as he bops his head toward his sister. This song, Jeff says, explaining modern life to me as if I'm a recently thawed caveman. Song of the summer. Oh, right. I go, but I have no idea. Not a single one, not a clue. I am as clueless about current pop culture as my mom is about current health trends. I am a classic film buff, which is just about everything about me that's buff. I am not proud of this, by the way. It's just an is. Other things I'm not proud of that just are include... When the dentist asks me if I floss every day, I sort of chortle and go, yeah, but I don't, guys. When I'm about to do something that makes me nervous, I imagine how the ideal screenplay version of events would play out. As in, I wish my life were a screenplay that I could write. Because if you leave it all up to fate, who knows how your movie's going to turn out? So far, mine's a fairly standard coming-of-age LGBT genre film with a somewhat macabre horror twist. But if it starts veering toward romantic comedy, somebody just murder me. Obviously, I would have made Annabeth direct the film of my life. She was such a good director. She could get compelling performances out of the neighborhood dogs, and she did, no sweat. Jesus, I am sweating. I must look like such a high school brat. The only person here not holding a red cup. What's with the red cups? The designated smoking window across the room is unoccupied, and I could use some breeze action. But before I make it over there, Carly pauses the music and shouts, "We're going to the roof! There's a surprise waiting there!" Big cheers. I scan the crowd for Jeff, but don't see him. Carly's going, don't kill each other on the way up and don't stomp because our landlady will freak out on us. But nobody's listening. The whole world loves surprises. You tell a group of people they're about to get a surprise, watch out. I hate surprises, I say, to nobody, following the herd and touching my haircut. Chapter 5. At the top of three more sets of stairs, I am heaving for breath and thinking that maybe Iron Man was stretching it as a character description for myself earlier. Carly slams through a hulking metal door, and a gush of wind makes the crowd go, "Ah!" in a big choral way. A couple of girls even throw on some harmony, and I am thinking they must be theater majors, but I'm not thinking it for long, because despite the glare of the rooftop sun backlighting the Cathedral of Learning and 100 miles of hills over our city's three awkwardly named rivers, I spot Jeff immediately. In fact, it's like the whole scene stops in order to rebuffer. Jeff is standing dead center on the roof, holding maybe 50 colorful balloons. What the hell, right? "Okay, guys, so listen up," Carly says. "Everybody go to my baby brother and grab a single balloon and then just sort of, like, spread out." Suddenly, all I want to be is in college. I'm one of the last people to get to Jeff, and he hands me a pink balloon, and I go, "Come on, you know my favorite color is green," which makes Jeff laugh because he knows my least favorite color is green. Sometimes you see the easy sitcom laugh sitting there and you just have to snatch it up. He and I find a place in the corner. It's a good thing the whole roof is bordered by a kind of old-fashioned guardrail, painted over with a billion layers of black. Enough of these undergrads are tipsy now that I am glad I won't have to watch some well-groomed drunk kid fall to his or her death tonight. New rule, I only want to know one person per 16 years who dies. So watch out for falling pianos, 32-year-old Quinn. Jeff's sister stands on a crate and rallies the crowd to look at her, whistling, clapping the works. "So this is something I used to do at the end of camp every year, and it's amazing." A few guys in khaki pants and these weirdly starched shirts start jovially pushing one another hard enough that one of them falls into a girl who spills beer all over her own tank top. I step forward to help the girl up, to grab the red cup she dropped, to rescue the situation, and it comes to me. Maybe instead of getting a job this summer, I'll just be the superhero boy who rescues girls from finance majors. "Don't let your balloon go yet," Jeff goes, gripping my hand in his own strong fist. I don't remember him being strong. This is the June where I've become handsome as woe, not my words, and Jeff has become strong. "Now that we have all pulled ourselves together," Carly goes, not so much shouting now as letting the audience come to her. Classic technique. There is nothing more frightening than how charming and civilized Anthony Hopkins is in The Silence of the Lambs, which was shot here in Pittsburgh, not incidentally. "Here's the game. I want everyone to think of three things that happened this year that they wish had gone differently," Carly says. And then, "They're allowed to be really sad." Oh. Jeff puts his hand on my shoulder, and I flinch it away fast, like I'm deflecting a moth or a bee. And in the flinch, I suddenly know what this is. This is for me, all of this. My mom must have known Jeff was going to take me out tonight, or else she would have put up a bigger fuss about me leaving her alone after dark. I'm not third tier tonight. I'm not even first tier. I am the only tier. This makes me incredibly nervous. "Does everybody have three things that they wish they could just let go of?" Carly says, and nobody says anything, which means they do. When nobody makes a single noise, it means they've never been concentrating harder on something. "On the count of three," Carly goes, "I want everybody to let go of their balloons. Are you with me?" The crowd smiles so hard, you can actually feel the wind change course. I've learned to semi-believe in stuff like this. The butterfly effect that says if 50 people smile at once, the power of their acne-pocked cheeks can change the wind, if not the world. A wind that has suddenly appeared on this stifling night like the superhero I'd never get cast as. Not this summer or any summer. And after you let your balloon go, Carly says, yep, she's still talking, I want you to picture the number one worst thing that happened to you this year, and I want you to watch it float away until you can't see it anymore. She pauses. Everybody close your eyes. This is what we did at camp. As if this last tidbit legitimizes the whole enterprise. Close your eyes, Quinny, Jeff says. And so I do, to humor him. And I earnestly try to think about the worst thing that happened to me this year. And instead, I come up with a riddle. How terrible of a guy do you have to be if the worst thing you can think of isn't that you lost your sister, but that you lost yourself? But then Carly goes, one! And by the time she gets to three, everybody's saying it with her. Even I am caught up in the moment to such a degree that I dare myself to imagine this turning into a perfect screenplay sequence, just like I did in the old days. Exterior, Carly's roof in Squirrel Hill. Night. Quinn and the college kids let their balloons go, watching as they turn from 50 separate shapes into 50 little skittles until, finally, the balloons become a single